Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9-1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Johnny Ball, best known for his 20-year BBC TV career, where he made his name writing and presenting light and entertaining educational shows. Starting as a stand-up comedian, he joined BBC's Play School in 1967, later creating fun-filled hit series like Think of a Number. His expertise in explaining maths and science with humour led to many successful corporate years with major organisations. At 86, Johnny continues to captivate audiences with lectures and stage shows about mathematics and his life in comedy. His autobiography is now out, called Johnny Ball, My Previous Life in Comedy. Welcome to the show, Johnny.
Thank you very much.
Oh, it's lovely to have you with us. And I love that you were questioning whether at 86, it's surely not too late to publish an autobiography. I think it's the perfect age.
It is. I hope I live long enough to publish part two, which comes out in about a year's time.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
This one only goes up to 1982, about halfway through my life, because it's quite a lot. It's 300 pages, but I think it's very readable. I've tried to make it very readable and funny, even.
And I understand you were very much inspired by your father to become a comedian. He was a kind of gag-a-minute type dad.
Oh, he was. He was very, very funny. We used to go on railway journeys in those days, and my mother would say, what station's that? And he'd go, Cheltenham. And then the next station, what station is that? He'd go, Cheltenham. And, of course, it wasn't Cheltenham, but on every station in those days, at each end of the platform, there's a big sign which read, Gentlemen.
Oh, brilliant.
The toilet. And that's what he thought. Yes, Cheltenham. Cheltenham, that's Cheltenham.
Oh, amazing. I'm interested hearing a bit about your schooling, because you talk about having dreadful teenage years in Bolton where education overlooked you. What do you mean?
Well, I passed my 11 plus in Bristol, where I was born. I was born in Bristol because my mother was there at the time and I wanted to be near her when I was born. It's quite a natural thing. But when I was 11, I took my 11 plus, but we moved to Bolton, where my parents came from, and we moved back. And in the first year, I got the maths prize and the chess prize and all whatever. Then I had an accident in the second year and lost half the autumn term. And the next year, I had an illness and lost half the autumn term. And anybody will tell you in schooling, if you lose the autumn term in any year, you can't catch up. So I was in form 2B, 3C, 4D, lower 5E, and lastly 5E, because they didn't have a 5F. And I was in the bottom set. But then they found out I got 100% in maths. So they realised there was something very odd. And as soon as I left school, I made up for it, and it was okay. But I had a terrible, terrible secondary schooling.
And you talk about also having your real education in the RAF.
Oh, that was my university. It was lovely. I still say to young people these days, if you haven't got any direction and you don't know what to do, have a look at the forces. You have to sign up for 5 years. It was 3 in my day, but I think you have to sign up for 5 years. But if you want to go to university, talk to them. Sign on, they'll pay for you to go to university and you'll be paid and you will come out of university without any debt. Now, that in itself is a tremendous fillip.
Yeah.
And you'll still only be 23. after your 5-year service, so your life's ahead of you. So, and I would say to people who, if they haven't got a direction, if they're not sure where they're going, think about that, because the Forces for me was really my university. I learned so much, and I came out feeling a foot higher than I was when I went in. You know, I'm just so much more confident, and that's what it did for me, and it was fabulous.
Oh, brilliant.
Not one sad day in 3 years.
Oh, that's incredible.
Only one day without a drink. We got trapped in an exercise, an RAF exercise, and it was a 16-hour exercise. And then they said, we're going to continue it for another 12 hours. And we realized that I wasn't going to get a drink. So I went to the officer of the watch. I said, have you got the key to the sick bay? I said, why? I said, well, me and Don Crockett aren't going to have a drink. And we've never failed to have a drink any day in the 2.5 years. He said, there's no brandy in there. I said, no, sir, it's surgical spirit.
Oh, and he God. Said, what?
And I said, with a lot of orange juice, with a lot of orange juice. And there was no surgical spirit. So we went 24 hours with that drink.
Oh, wow. Amazing. And tell me about your time in Liverpool. You talk about working with the less fortunate whilst crossing paths with future stars. What was all that about?
That's right. Well, I was there 2 years. I was there in the winter of 60-61 and then 2 years later. And in 60-61, I went to Liverpool after working at Butlins, and I had two phone numbers. One was Ringo Starr, and one was Rory Storm, the leader of the band that he was in. And I rang Rory and got through, and his sister said, oh, they're in Hamburg. So I moved into Rory's bed and stayed there while I was working in a shipping office, because I had to earn some money until I got drumming jobs in Liverpool, which Ringo assured me I would get, you see. And eventually I did. But in January, back came Rory Storm and the Hurricanes from Hamburg with another group called the Beatles. And they arrived, and they were all in this Rory Storm's house, which was called Stormville, because Rory Storm's house was Stormville. And it was fabulous. Now, their houses are all museums today, which is rather hysterical. They never went home. They were always around Rory Storm's house all the time. And because their parents were frowning on what they were doing, and they might have been throwing their lives away. Well, they threw it into pop, and they didn't miss it. They did very well. So lovely. And I knew them for that while, and then 2 years later I was back, and they broke. And by now, Ringo had joined the Beatles, and they broke, and it was just amazing, fabulous. Right? And in that year when they broke, I was with George one night, and there was a rattling on the window, and we went to the window, and it was Paul McCartney, and we rushed out, and he's in the car listening to the first ever live broadcast they ever heard, the first time they ever heard themselves on radio. And I was there, and it's, for them, it was a magic moment, a bit passé now with what they've done since then. But they were very, very talented, clearly. But I did tell them I didn't think there was any money in pop music.
But I'm guessing they proved you wrong. Oh, brilliant. So tell us about your time in stand-up comedy then, because I obviously remember you making maths fun on television, which I'm eternally grateful for.
Well, that was from a hobby, but I said when I was 11, because my dad was so funny, I said, I will be a comedian, and that's what I wanted to do. I couldn't think of any better career than making people laugh and making people happy. So that's what I aimed for. And I went to Butlins when I was 14, and there's a redcoat who was doing jokes like, over here it's a Palm Court restaurant. It's called the Palm Court because the door's got a strong spring, and when you go in, you're apt to get your Palm Court. And that was Des O'Connor. And I said, I'm going to do that. And he was 7 years older than me, Des. And I said, I'm going to do that. So I followed him. And it was the right way, because Butlins was Smile School before the kids discovered Spain and the Mediterranean and the sun. It was where everybody went, you know, to lose their inhibitions, but everything else they might lose at Butlins. And it was fabulous being part of it. And I had 3 years, lovely years. And that's in the winter of between the second and third year. I worked them all the way through. And that's when I started comedy. And that's when I started doing my act. And then I left determined to be a pro comic. I was a semi-pro for a year and then turned pro in 64. And I loved the clubs. I really loved the clubs. But I didn't want to break into television, so I turned down opportunity knocks every year. They offered me, every year they offered me. I said, no. I said, it's for amateurs, and it's not me. It's not, I don't want to do what I'm doing in the clubs on television anyway. It's, I was, the audiences loved me because they encouraged me to be mucky. And I wasn't ever very mucky. By today's standards, I never swore. Never saw one word. And I was never, but I was, there's a few sexy things, you know, like the girl who went to the doctor's and the doctor said, you've got Egyptian flu. She said, what do you mean? He said, you're going to be a mummy. And she said, pregnant, I can't be. I've only been to Bosslins. And so on and so on. And they were cheeky. And it was lovely with the audiences because they were all young audiences. And I loved it. In the first year as a comic, a pro comic, I had 9 nights off. I had a minivan because I played the drums at the end. And I had a minivan with the drums in the back. And I was doing over 100 miles a day, every day. And I just loved it. I absolutely loved it. And everybody paid you cash. So when I decided to buy a new car, I bought a Rover 2000, which in those days was £1,400 brand new. And he said, well, will you want terms? And I said, no. And took out my wallet and had that much money in my wallet to buy a brand new car. Yeah. And that's what it was like. And it was fabulous. But then I was offered, the BBC wanted to see people, and I thought it's for crackerjack. And I went, and I knew I'd got this job. He said, oh, you're going to be wonderful in Play School. I said, what's Play School? And he said, it's under five. So they talked me into doing an audition. And you always, in show business, you always get the job you don't want. And I didn't need that. But I did it. And the integrity of the people who did it was so lovely. And it was a perfect contrast to the clubs, because the clubs were lovely, but they were rough and ready, and it was a bit bawdy, I loved it. But suddenly it was a more placid thing around Play School. So I stayed for 17 years.
Wow.
And that's when I learned television. While I was with them, I learned television. And my comedy training taught me to write scripts. So I wrote 20 series of programs. And they all have light and shade in them, fun and seriousness, all mixed up. And I compiled the programs exactly the same way as you compile a comedy script. It's got to have light and shade. It's got to be like a scene at railway. It's got to be up and down.
Yeah.
And so that's where it all paid off, and it was lovely.
Wasn't it a huge change, though, writing for adults? I know you say you weren't swearing and things like that, but even so, you were performing on stage primarily for adults with the comedy, to then suddenly entertaining young children. I mean, completely different audience.
And that's the joy of it. So coming this way, I'm happy whatever audience I have. So I'd be doing the clubs, and they say, still doing that Play School job? And I said, yeah. Still watching it, are you? And if anybody shouts in the audience, get back to Play School, they say another word from you and you're going through the square window.
Exactly.
And I was out of that. It was all gags and it was fine. And I love the contrast. And as I say, but I learned television from being in television and started to write, and it was lovely.
You must have so many now adults, obviously, coming up to you in the street over the years, thanking you for making maths fun. I mean, you must have had an impact on so many children enjoying and understanding maths.
I've had a charmed life because of that. I was just in skiing. I'm 86, but we were skiing before last.
And wow.
It's lovely. Go skiing when you're 86. My lift pass for 4 days was €2.
€2.
And that's for the season. That's 2 years for the season.
Amazing.
But you've got to clock in every day and have your card charged up, because they look at you and think, is this old God, you're really fit to be on the slope? And of course I was, and it was lovely. So that was great, and I'm still lively, still working, publishing this book. The sequel will come out next year. And it's all, it's just lovely. So you've got to cash in on what you have. And it's lovely that people remember me. And I don't mean cash in a financial way. I just mean fill your life with what your life gives you the chances to do, you know, and it's just lovely. So I've got so much advice. My three kids are all right. There's Nick and Dan, and what's the other one called? Oh, Zoe.
And, she's done a few things, hasn't she? She's done all right.
She's okay. You know, on the back of the book, she says, it warms the cockles of my heart. When in her program, when she did the breakfast show, the number of people who say, "Oh, I love your dad," 20 years ago, and that was always lovely. It really was always lovely. All kinds of people. David Jason. She was talking to David Jason. He spent half the program talking about me, you know, and that was lovely. I've only met him once.
Brilliant.
I really have had a charmed life, and it's been lovely. But the book's full of ups and downs. You see, a lot of downs. There were a lot of down to come up again and down to come up again, you know. So it's like a scenic railway, the book.
And have you already written the second part?
I have. The second one is called Stories That Must Be Told. Mm-hmm. They're stories that just, you can't believe it. Stories that have to be told because they're so outrageous, you know. Like when the Duke of Edinburgh suggested wife swapping to me. Now, so what was
and
that?
And what
about?
Was your answer?
I have to tell the story. Don't shut me off now.
Sorry.
So I was doing the Duke of Edinburgh Awards, and the Duke of Edinburgh Awards, all the gold winners come with one parent. They can't take two because there's too many of them. So one parent comes with a gold winner, and they're all in rooms. And in St. James's Palace, there are five rooms. So they have a speaker in each room until the Duke comes, right? So he came to me in the third room, and he said, "What are you going to be telling them?" And I said, "Well, sir, I'm going to be telling them I had a crush on your wife." And he said, "What?" And I said, "When I was six in 1944, Princess Elizabeth was 18, and she just joined the RAF, and she was on the newsreels. Everybody went to the cinema the other day, and she was on the newsreels in RAF uniform, fixing trucks under the bonnets, right, and then driving them. And it was still the war, 1944. We were still in the war. It hadn't finished then. And she was a complete heroine of mine, and I had a total crush on her." And he said, "You can't tell them that." I said, "Well, I think I will, sir." And he said, "In that case, I'm having her." And he grabbed my wife, died. And he's off out the room, he died. And the place erupted. He was such a funny, funny man. And he's off, he died. And I had to wrestle her away from him. It took some doing because she was pulling his way.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. So when is the next one out? I'd love to have you on the show again so we can...
About a year. We haven't fixed it yet, but it's about a year.
Okay. Oh, exciting. You've obviously had great fun writing the books. Have you kept diaries over the years? Was it easy to kind of go back and remember everything?
Never. I remember so much. I've got a wonderful brain. It's paid for now. And it's mine. And I kept up the installment. And no, it's lovely. When I got into maths, that was the oddest thing. I had a neighbour and his two boys, he was Jewish and he lived about four doors away. And his two boys were very bright, but they were losing their interest in maths. So I taught them, I showed them some maths tricks, right? And, all right, here you are. We've got time. Give me two numbers between 100 and 110. Two numbers between 100 and 110, and I'll give you the total when they're multiplied together very quickly.
104 and 107.
Yeah, 11128. There you are. And so I taught them things like that and tricks like that, you see, and got them going. And David, the older one, went to Cambridge and became Wrangler. But when they told him he was Wrangler, he said, "So I'm getting the best education." They said, "You certainly are." I said, "Well, I think it's terrible." And he went to Tel Aviv and he never came back. And he was Jewish and he went to Tel Aviv. But Basil, the dad, said, "You've just got a gift for maths and science. Why are you doing comedy? You're funny, but God, you'd be much better doing maths and science." And that was the idea. And so I said to my producers, I want to do a program on maths. And their chins just dropped and hit the table. So we tried it and we wrote it. And a show's about 24 minutes and 30 seconds. So with an audience of about 20 in a rehearsal room, I did it, but I did it like my stand-up comedy. I had no props, I had no script. I walked through it as though the set was all there, as though the props were all there. And I talked to the cameras as though the cameras were there. And after 24 minutes and 30 seconds, I finished. And they just gave a standing ovation because all my training in comedy led me to be able to do that. We commit 24 minutes to memory and not even have to think about taking a note. And that was bang, and we won BAFTA. And then we did Think Again, and we won. We got nominated for an international Emmy, and we went to New York thinking, oh, we're bound to win this. But a thing called Fraggle Rock with about 10 times our budget.
Yes.
About 10 times. They won. They knew they were going to win. You know, you get award nights and you get a very big room with about 600 people in it. They'd rented the room above, which is exactly the same size, to celebrate winning.
Oh, no! So
they had some inside information. But they invited us up, and we went up, and they offered me a job. But it would be working in Manchester. And I said, in Canada. Where did I say Manchester? It wasn't in Canada. And I said, oh, I can't with all the work I'm doing. So I turned down Jim Henson just when they were starting the Muppet. And I turned it down.
Amazing.
But it was lovely. And I worked with them a few times, Jim Henson and his group later, and they always opened the door for me. Always. And it was just lovely.
Lovely. Well, it's been an absolute joy to have you with us on Talk Radio Europe. Johnny Bull, thank you so much for joining us. And I know listeners will love your first instalment of your autobiography, My Previous Life in Comedy. It's available on our website, tre.radio. And I really look forward to chatting with you again next year when part two is out.
I can't wait.
Thank you, Johnny. Bye. You take care.
Thanks ever so much. You've been wonderful. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.